Well, it does give me a great deal of pleasure to introduce our speaker this evening. I think it's kind of interesting that as a Friday night I got to introduce my Uncle Leslie as one of the guys that the men who stood in the gap for my father and the impact he had on his life, on my life. And I get to introduce another one tonight. And Roger had, basically, I grew up and spent part of my growing up years in your house with your kids. And so he kind of became a de facto father figure for me. And I did learn a great deal from him. It was mostly where he parked his police car when he was doing crossword puzzles. And so I knew I didn't have to worry about it, that one. And the little pearls of when you see two cop cars parked together that they're talking and they're not going to bother you. And so those are the wisdom that I was able to pick up from him. But I also, I actually got to spend a whole lot more time with Roger this year. Unfortunately, it was up at St. Mary's. But I do feel a great deal of affection for him. It gives me just a great deal of pleasure to have him speak. I ask that you give your careful and prayerful attention to our brother, Roger Bruner.
That's not part of it. But it was an enjoyable handful. He's just one of us, really. And I would like to thank not only him, but everybody out here for their support in February. Because this bunch here at this local really showed me some support. And I really appreciate it. With all the time I've had to sit around and think here in the last few months, there's been a lot of reminiscing that I've done. About my spiritual welfare, about how I came about with my spiritual welfare, what the church has done for me, what this church has done for me. Because when I was growing up, I didn't have much use for all you phony Christians. And it wasn't anything that just popped into my mind. I learned about it a little at a time from things that I saw in other churches and from other people and the way that they would act in church and then the way that they would act when they got out of church. And I might have been young, but I picked up on a lot of stuff. And by the time that I got away from home, I didn't have too much use for church. It's all a bunch of phonies, a bunch of hypocrites. When I was 17, I started driving an ambulance. And it was in that ambulance that I met Martha. Obviously, we ended up getting married. That was 56 years ago, so I guess it's going to last. But then when I found out what church she went to, I was a little disappointed because of what I'd heard about this church. Not from the people in the church, but from the people there in Independence. You see, when I was growing up, I didn't know there was a difference between that little white church on the temple out in the earliest church. I just didn't pay any attention. It was just all there together. I grew up with two boys that were RLDS through high school with them. Did a lot of things, got in a lot of trouble with them, stuff like that. But when you'd be over to their house, you knew that their folks were RLDS, and I became aware of a lot of the things that they believed in, like reincarnation. And I didn't question it because I didn't know any different. Now I wonder, where did they get that? But that was one of the things that just form in your mind, you know, one of the little building blocks that gives you opinion about religious people and stuff. And I knew I didn't believe in reincarnation even at that age. But they did, and a few other things. Which made me decide that religion was a waste of time, because that's not what I remember the Bible saying. So I go to work at the ambulance company when I got out of high school. Like I said, I was driving an ambulance by the time I was 17, or what passed for an ambulance back then. I'm not saying that we were primitive or anything, but my boss found out that there was such a thing called CPR. And we had to go to Chicago to learn it because nobody in the Kansas City area understood it. And we were ridiculed because we went all the way to Chicago to learn something silly. Now that's how long ago that's been. But my boss at the ambulance company was RLDS. So one day we're going down Walnut there in town, and we go by the temple lot. And he said, "You see that little white church over there?" And I go, "Yeah." He goes, "You know what they believe?" I said, "Well, no. Isn't that a part of the RLDS church?" And he says, "No, that's a different church." He says, "They believe that off down in South America in the jungles, the Indians have carved stones." Now, just humor me here and see how this fits. Down in the jungle in South America, of all these Indian tribes have carved stones. And when you, they're strung all over square and square miles of land down there in the jungle. They're all separate. And when you fit them all together, they're going to fit perfectly. And they believe that when the time that the Lord tells them to do it, they're going to drag all those stones to the coast and put them on rafts. And it's going to float across the Gulf of Mexico and up the Mississippi and up the Missouri and get to a spot close to that lot over there, and then they're going to go drag them over here and build a temple. And I said, "Well, they're nuts. I didn't know you guys." And I believed that for a long time. But where'd they get that? That was a part of his belief, just like the other RLDS people that I had been with, and that was their beliefs. Where'd they get that? One thing led to another, and there was Martha became aware real quick when we got married that I wasn't going to put up with a lot of religious stuff because I'd already been that route. My grandpa Swink was pretty, an intense Baptist. I found out after I went to work with a bunch of them there in the police department that at least there in that area at that time, there were 16 different kinds of Baptists. I don't know what they were. You know, probably from liberal to conservative. I don't know. And I'm pretty sure my grandpa Swink was a conservative. They had 15 kids. All the boys had to learn a Bible verse every week or they got a whipping. That's the way all my uncles on that side of town, on that side of the family grew up. And when they got big enough to whip my grandpa, they never went to church again. And he was part of my upbringing. My grandpa was. And that's where I formed some of my opinions about religion. He believed in this book. That's what he said. As a matter of fact, he memorized that book. And we had an occasion, Martha's dad and I had an occasion to be out there in Pacoima, California with him one time for 3 nights. And Vance spent 3 nights trying to trip him up. And Grandpa knew that book. Vance gave him a book and a chapter and a passage, and Grandpa Swinkett would repeat it. But I don't think he understood it. In fact, I know he didn't understand it. Because you see, when my mom was growing up, every time that you have a difference of opinion in a Protestant church, which is where I grew up, typically that grows out of the fact that the preacher gets to stepping on your toes. When the group that's getting their toes stepped on gets mad enough, they decide to fire them. And you got to have 2/3 votes to fire them. When my mom was little, up in Morristown, South Dakota, they couldn't fire the preacher because they couldn't get the 2/3 votes. So they decided to kill him. But they were Christians. You don't believe them, just ask them. Believed in this book, they said. You know, I don't see in there where it says you can do that. So where'd they get it? Our church burned in 1990, I think it was, wasn't it? January 1, 1990, there on the temple lot. And by that time I was assistant pastor. For some reason, all of our valuable papers were in a safe that's underneath the stairs there by the front door. So when the guy that was burning the church got to do his little dance out on the sidewalk or out on the front porch, and the police got him, Alvin and I went in there, Alvin Harris and I went in there to get the papers. The deed to that temple lot was among them. And there was an awful lot of fire apparatus showing up. We got the stuff out of the safe, and I got it into my van, and all I had could do was to drive across the street, and at that time, there was just a parking lot there. So I parked the van, locked it up, stood there beside it, was watching the fire department do their thing on the church, and down the sidewalk comes an assistant fire chief that I knew that was obviously off duty. He was in civilian clothes, and there was another guy with him that I didn't know, and boy, were they animated, and boy, were they excited. And then he spots me, and he says, "Well, Roger, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, I go to that church." He goes, "Oh, we're so sorry." He said, "That is just terrible." They just were stumbling over themselves, apologizing and sympathizing with us. So when that phase of that conversation gets over with, he says, "Well, now, what are you going to do? What are y'all going to do?" I said, well, we'll rebuild. He says, "Where?" I said, "Well, right there." He said, "But you can't." I said, "Well, why can't we?" He says, "Well, don't you know that when you guys lose that building on that lot, it reverts back to the earliest church and then it's ours?" And I said, "Really?" I said, "Well, then, how come I got the deed to that land in my van, laying here in my van?" Well, you know, I may as well have shot him. The reaction I got. He goes, "You can't have that deed." And I said, "Oh, yeah, we got the deed." Well, he was still trying to be nice. But he wasn't doing a very good job of it. And they excused themselves, and they went back up the that sidewalk, just about as agitated as they come back, but it was the other kind of agitation. Where'd they get that? Where do you get that kind of stuff? How do people come up with that kind of information? I don't think it's anything facetious to them, and they didn't just pop up with it. That kind of stuff grows over time, and it becomes a legend, and it becomes a lore within the groups that believe it. The LDS Church decides to include women in the ministry. They accept gays. They build a temple across the street from where it's supposed to be built. As a matter of fact, when they did that, their president, Wallace Smith at the time, he did a front page on the Examiner there in Independence, the hometown newspaper. Very first sentence in that was that the Lord had changed his mind. Very first sentence. And they believed that. Within the next year, that church went from one church to 143 different groups. And they're still splitting, and they're still fighting, and they're still maneuvering. And you can just about have it a different agenda of why they do that for each group. I end up being a minister for the gospel in this church. Through a set of circumstances, I end up having to travel, or getting to travel. Well, Martha grew up with George and Levita Reed. They lived in Independence. They grew up in Independence. Then they moved to Bemidji, Minnesota. And then they moved to Alaska. We went up to visit them. We find out that they're meeting with a group called the Old Saints Organization up there. And what it is a whole group of dissident RLDS people that has tried to do this and tried to do that and to get a group started. And they get it in their head that George wants a rally up there. George and Levita decided that we needed a rally up in Alaska. And one thing led to another, and we did it. But I had to go up there and organize it. So they got elders in their group. So we sat down to have a get acquainted meeting. And the first thing they wanted to know out of me, are you an elder? And I said, yes, I am. And he says, what's your specialty? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, if you're an elder, that means that you've been given a special talent by the Lord. And I couldn't think of one right off the top of my head that was special. So I said, well, I think my specialty is preaching repentance. And he goes, oh, no, not that. He says, you got to have a specialty. And I said, well, then I don't know what you're talking about. What's your specialties? One of them, he can stand up here like this and have a congregation out there in front of him. And he looks out over the crowd, and every time he sees a little black tornado over your head, you got the Spirit with you. And that's his specialty. And that was his service. Another one can go down to the temple out there in Independence and take his shoes and socks off and walk across the grass, and it feels like he's walking on crushed eggshells. And that's his specialty. Where in the world did they get that? Where in the world do you say you believe in these books and you come up with stuff like that? You see why I thought you was all nuts for a while? Went on the police department. Of course, by the time I went on there, I'd been an ambulance driver for several years, so I was well on my way to being cynical. And I told Martha, I said, you know, you get any of your ministry to come over to the house to talk to me. I said, I'm going to throw them out. I don't want to hear it. And she believed me. And for 17 years, she was pretty good at not letting the ministry come in and talk to me. Because I'd heard all I wanted to hear. I had heard all I wanted to hear. And then she started bringing me around to her family. We come out here. I was around her dad, Vance Harris. There was an elderly gentleman down around the corner from me named Maynard Case. There was two out here named Harvey and Johnny Bell. And you know, they never talked religion to me at all. And I watched them like a hawk because I knew sooner or later they were going to do it. And they didn't. And they convinced me what this church was about. And we never cracked a book. The only person I ever asked a question to was Maynard Case one day up there at the temple lot. And I said, what's the Book of Mormon? And he says, it's a stick of Joseph. And I thought he was going to fall out of his chair because I asked him that question. And that was the only question I asked him. I learned about the Bible and I learned about the Book of Mormon. And I'm going to blame it on the Holy Ghost is what I'm going to blame it on. Vance Harris died, never knew I joined this church. Harvey Bell did. Johnny Bell did. Maynard Case baptized me. Matter of fact, I had such a good reputation in this church for not wanting to talk religion that when I decided to get baptized, I didn't want a crowd. And we always had 16 at the Wednesday night prayer service here on the temple lot. So I asked my brother-in-law, Alvin, who was a pastor there then, I said, think I can get baptized this next Wednesday at the prayer service? And when he got up off the floor, he said, well, we probably can do that. Well, he made the mistake, as far as I was concerned, of announcing it. When we got to prayer service the next Wednesday night, it was full. I found out that the East Local, they canceled their service to come over because they didn't believe it. And that's what they told me. But when I got convinced, I got convinced. I really did. But it was the hard way. Because I watched you people like a hawk. Well, your ancestors, most of you. And I watched how you acted. And I watched what you talked about. But those four gentlemen that I've named, they never said a word about religion to me. But they convinced me that this was the right church. And they did it by what they did. And their conversations. And the decisions they made. And how they treated other people. Nothing convinces like an example. I like Proverbs. The other 65 books in the Bible and the 17 in the Book of Mormon, they all say the same thing as Proverbs. They all agree. And each one of them puts it a different way, but they all teach the same thing. In chapter 1 of Proverbs, it starts with verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. And then in my Bible, it says the purpose of this book of Proverbs. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and And a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. Dark sayings are riddles or things that you don't understand. I know I came to believe as I was growing up that you couldn't understand all the mysteries in the Bible. I'm of the opinion now there aren't any mysteries in the Bible. We make them. Just like if we think there's a contradiction in the Bible, we make it. God knew what he was doing when he had this thing composed. God knew what he was doing when King James picked the group that took all the Bibles that were being argued about at the time and compiled them into this book. He's just a little bit more powerful than men are. Now, men can change, men can do this, men can do that, and we know that. Because we still got a whole bunch of Bibles out there. And every one of them that I've ever had explained to me, they all start off the same way. Well, it's a little easier to understand, is the way they start off at explaining why they have a new Bible. But invariably, they've changed something in there, even subtly, to make it sound like something that they can be more comfortable with instead of what they're supposed to be doing. Those first six verses there, or the first five of the six verses there in that chapter one, you know, I think that I've come to the conclusion that that's what you'd call a truth. That's what this Bible is about. That's what this Book of Mormon is about. It is exactly what I read there. And everything else builds on that. Because that is what builds character. That is what builds the spirit that you operate by. That is what gives you the instructions from God. As in other denominations, and there are thousands of denominations today, and a lot of them use this book. Most of them ignore that. And they have ceremonies, they have rituals, they have sayings, they have liturgies, they have all kinds of things that they hang their hat on. But when you read those six verses right there, and then you read the rest of this book, and you read the Book of Mormon, that's what that teaches you how to do. That's what teaches you how to look at things. That's what teaches you why this is so attractive, especially to the welfare of your souls, is that passage. There in the second verse, to know wisdom and instruction, the definition for wisdom on that is skilled living. How to live a fruitful, productive life. And not only just for you, but for the not only for you, but those around you. They call it skilled living. By the time they got done, you know, it's transferred over in, or translated over into the word wisdom for us. But then you get into the third verse, uses that word again. To receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. And basically, what it says on there in wisdom is common sense. Good sense. So what's so mysterious about that, if that's what you're striving for? Now, maybe if you're looking for your church to buy you a $54 million airplane, maybe that don't make much sense. Don't know whether you've been following that or not, and I don't know what that televangelist's name is. I can't remember what his name is. But within the last couple of 3 weeks, it hit all the news medias about this televangelist that's wanting $54 million so he can buy his fourth jet because his other three are too small. Watched a video of that. Kenneth Copeland is the other televangelist that was with him on this video. And it wasn't a report about that, it was those guys talking. And they're saying, well, you know, the reason he needs that is that in a commercial airliner, you just can't stand up when you need to and raise your arms and praise the Lord. They won't let you do that. Besides that, there's all those demons on those commercial jets. You people. And they bother you by asking you to pray for them. And that's a quote. Now, where did they get that? What makes them head that direction? It's the way they read this truth. I don't know how many billions of people there are in this world. I don't have to go to that. What do we got, 50-some in here tonight? I'll use you all for an example. There's about 50 different personalities in here. And that's needed to have a functional, viable, positive community. Everybody has to have a slightly different opinion of things. Because then when you make them cooperate, or when they want to cooperate, that's a better way of saying it. And they have a common goal, and they understand the functionality of how you need to get to that goal, you get things done, and you get things done with the least amount of mistakes. Because you have consensus, and you have talking, and you have negotiation, and you have back and forth. If you want to see civilizations that do it by dictatorship, one guy has all the ideas and only his ideas prevail and nobody else can do anything. Take a look at Hitler. Take a look at the dictators of this world that have failed because they're the only ones that can make the decision. And they can't do it. They can't handle it because it's not humanly possible. That's why God gave every one of us something a little different. And then he gave us this and this, the Bible and the Book of Mormon, to enable us to get along, to get the problem solved, and to handle the things that the world handles. But yet you get out here to these thousands and thousands of denominations. Thank you very much. And they've got all kinds of agendas about this Bible, not counting this. It started with this, with another whole agenda with this book. We all know that Joseph Smith was given the gift of translating that from the plates. And we all know that this is plainer and simpler than this. Just like the sign on the wall back here says, it's like one, there is one in thine hand. But they say the same thing. And it's for our benefit. It's for the welfare of our souls that those things occur. And that's the way God created our instruction manuals to help us solve problems. Our own personal problems, our problems as a group. And it wasn't just us he did that with. He did that with the world. I've listened to a lot of people over the years talk about their religion. When I was up on the administration there in the PD, we talked religion a lot up there. No, we talked denominations a lot up there. That's where I found out that there were 16 different kinds of Baptists, because we probably had five or six of them right there on that one floor. And they fought like crazy amongst each other. And it was all the same denomination. And the reason was that I come up with is why, if you sit and listen to them, one bunch believed this. This is figurative. Another bunch believed this. And another bunch believed this. And it all depends on which one of these passages you wanted to hang your hat on. You didn't have any use for the ones that didn't think the same way you did. So they split. And they hated each other. As a matter of fact, the arguing got so bad amongst those people that the chief had to put a moratorium on talking religion on the floor so we could get some work done. And it was all the same denomination. Where'd they get that? How do you get that out of these books? How do you get that? What people of the world thinks of this book. You know what's in this book. I know, I hope I know, what's in this book. You know what it tells you. You know the promises and the instructions and the hope and the strength that's in the Book of Mormon. My brother-in-law, my ex-brother-in-law, he was a pastor in the Carmelite Church of Christ, still is. He had a Book of Mormon, but he used it to argue against it. But he found out he couldn't. And finally one day he slipped and let me know. He said, well, the reason that we don't use that is it tells our people that we're not supposed to get paid. That's pretty good reason for not believing in the Book of Mormon, right? See, when he graduated from the seminary or Bible college or whatever he graduated with, his last assignment was to give his instructors a career timeline on where he was to be in 20 years as a minister. And his 20-year goal was a Learjet. And they bought it. That was acceptable. That's how they taught things. That was their aims. Economics. Personal gain. He was, I guess you call him, moderate Carmelite. There's three different kinds of Carmelites. There's liberals, there's moderates, and there's conservatives. And they were moderates. But that was acceptable. That was an acceptable timeline to be a minister. The monetary success. He had a girlfriend in every church he pastored, my sister found out. And when she finally had it, divorced him, the congregation was just really against her. In fact, they shunned her because she divorced him because he had a girlfriend in church. And her husband knew it. And it was okay. Where do you get that? Where do you get that out of the same books that we read? Well, you don't. You say you believe in that book. But then you go off on another tangent, or you get off on some kind of a story, you get off on a wishful thinking, or you get off on something else. Personal agendas. Got a church down in Houston, Missouri, that's not our church. Got a new pastor here about 10 years ago. He was an ex-Dallas policeman, Dallas, Texas policeman. Told his congregation unabashedly that the reason that he decided to become a minister was that he could make more money than being a policeman. And they were proud of that, that they could pay him enough money that he could quit being a policeman. That's why I always have a problem with organized religion. I've always had. That's not in this book. That's not in this book. This is the truth. But that they say they get out of these things is a fairy tale. It's almost blasphemous with some of the stuff that they come up with, that they say they get out of this book. I hope a bunch of us don't have this, and a bunch of us don't hang our hat on this, and a bunch of us don't hang our hat on this. What I want us to hang our hat on is this and this, because that's the only way you're going to get the truth. You can't take a passage, you can't take a verse, you can't take a chapter, you can't take a story and make it work for everything. We live in a society that TV has trained us to make decisions in 22 minutes, whether we know it or not, or 44 minutes, because that's how long TV shows last, sans the commercials. So you have a problem, you come up with a decision on what to do about that problem, and then you act out your solving that problem, and then you have the riding off into the sunset with the to a 32-piece orchestra. It's the same thing. It's always been the same thing with TV shows. But you always get the thing done in one session. And we tend to do that subconsciously. We tend to, because that's the way we're trained. We want it done. So that's how people tend to use these books. They use a verse. They use a passage. And that's not the way these books are to be used. This is the truth, not page 396. And that's pretty effective to hang a verse on somebody. Used to hear about it a lot downstairs in the locker room at the police department, because you'd hear a conversation going on and there'd be a difference of opinion down there about something, and there'd be two guys that wouldn't have any idea what goes on in a church, and one of them would quote some verse that he thinks he got out of the Bible, and the other one just collapses because he doesn't know how to come up. He doesn't know how to retaliate against that. Then the people around him think that that's the truth. Kind of like the two old gold miners out in California in the gold rush days. Come Sunday morning, and they're down by the stream, and they're washing their clothes, and somehow they get on the subject of religion. And one said, well, I was raised in church. I know things about religion. And he says, oh, you were not. He says, yes, I was. I know a little bit about religion. He says, you don't know anything about religion. He says, I know the Lord's Prayer. He says, I can recite the Lord's Prayer. And another guy said, you can't recite the Lord's Prayer. He says, I'll bet you an ounce of gold I can recite the Lord's Prayer. So the guy says, done. So they get their gold out and set it on a stump. And he says, now go ahead. First one goes, well, now I lay me down to sleep. Second one says, okay, that's enough. I didn't know you knew it. Here's the gold. That still goes on. That principle still goes on. When you don't get in here and read these books for what they're supposed to be and for what it's supposed to do for the welfare of your soul and for my soul and the instructions that God down through the ages has caused to be preserved for our use, for our edification, for our chastisement, for our strength, and we hotscotch through the things or we use just a little piece of this without understanding the whole thing. Example, Alma, 21st chapter of Alma. You get down into quite a ways into the 21st chapter, and it gets to talking about, I can't even say it now, it's a block. Amalekiah, I'm going to say it that way. The guy that got rule over the Lamanites by the murder and deception and lying and killing the king and all of the stuff that he did and lying to everybody. And he did it with the idea that he was going to destroy the Nephites. That's part of what I'm talking about, but I'm not going to bore you with reading those four or five or six pages that bring up to this. But that's the first half of it. And the tail end of that was, on verse 122 on page 478, it says, and they were drinking in with the traditions of the Lamanites, giving way to indolence and all manners of lasciviousness, yea, entirely forgetting the Lord their God. And then as he acquired that status and that position with those Lamanites, and he began to plot against the Nephites and how to destroy them. So you're going down the page on 478. And I'm going to start at verse 128. And now it came to pass that while Amalickiah had thus been obtaining power by fraud and deceit, Moroni, on the other hand, had been preparing the minds of the people to be faithful unto the Lord their God. If you're of a mind to, and if you want to do the 22nd, put the other guy down, instead of giving the truth, you could stop there. And you could give him your definition of preparing the minds of people to be faithful unto the Lord their God. And if the other guy is not versed in this, then he'd believe you, and you won your argument. But that's not the truth. Yea, and he'd been strengthening the armies of the Nephites, erecting small forts or places of resort, throwing up banks of earth around about to enclose his armies, building walls of stone to encircle them about, and around about their cities, and the border of their lands, yea, all round about the land. And in their weakest fortifications he did place greater number of men, and thus did he fortify and strengthen the land which was possessed by the Nephites. He was preparing them to be faithful unto their Lord God by preparing them for war. That's a dichotomy, isn't it? And thus he was preparing to support their liberty, their lands, their wives, their children, their peace, that they might live unto the Lord their God, that they might maintain that which was called by their enemies the cause of Christians. And I tripped right over that verse when I finally got it, I guess you'd say. Matthew. I'm not done in there, but I'm just, this is a little aside. Matthew 5:21 or 22. Verse 22. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry, this is Christ speaking, but I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, Thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Word cause is in there. That's the one I tripped over in the Book of Mormon. So I got to looking. This is a list of the word cause. There's over 50 of them in the Bible that uses the word cause in that context. Replace it with reason if you want to. Why does he say angry? Well, why does Jesus go, you go on down to verse 29 in that same chapter. And why does he say this in the Mideast? And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee, for it's profitable for them that one of thy members should perish, and not that, but the whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. You want to take that literally? How many times can your right eye offend thee? Once. Then you have got to take your left one. And if your right hand offend thee, then how many more times can you be offended? It's the way they talked back then. It's the word choices they used. Go to 3 Nephi, I'm not going to do it, but go to 3 Nephi, 5th chapter, verse 78, and see how Christ used that very same principle over here in the Book of Mormon. And to us, it makes a whole lot more sense because of the way we talk. And it's plainer and simpler. I've always mulled that over. Why is that in there that way? But when I read this over here on verse 131 in the 21st chapter of Alma, it just kind of rang a bell. But I'm going to go on because I'm not done with the truth. And Moroni was a strong and mighty man, and he was a man of perfect understanding, yea, a man that did not delight in bloodshed, a man whose soul did joy in liberty, in the liberty and the freedom of his country and his brethren from bondage to slavery. Yea, a man whose heart did swell with thanksgiving to his God for the many privileges and blessings which he bestowed upon his people, a man who did labor exceedingly for the welfare and safety of his people. Yea, and he was a man who was firm in the faith of Christ, and he had sworn with an oath to defend his people, his rights, his country, his religion, even to the loss of his blood. And you can go on down about Nephi. Not Nephi, Moroni. And he had all those attributes, and I wish I had those attributes. That has to do with the welfare, that forms the welfare of your soul, having those attributes, and makes you see things differently than if you were indolent and I have all manner of lasciviousness and stuff like that that the Lamanites had. Exactly the opposite. But he was willing to defend to death his people, and they prepared for it. But they did it for the right reason. They weren't pacifists. To get to the truth of that story, you got to read all of it. It's all there, including what kind of a person does that. I tend not to do that. I don't know about you. I tend to read 2 or 3 verses and then build an opinion on that. And that's not right. Not in my eyes, it's not. Because you're not doing the whole story. You're not having the whole understanding of what the situation is. And this book is full of those kinds of stories, if that's what you're looking for. They sent me to a school down in Florida one time for a month. I don't know. They called it an executive development school. It was just for police officers. That whole school was on human behavior. How to take care of people. How to take care of your people. How to take care of your subordinates. How to help them get the best out of each other. How to cooperate. How to inspire them. And it was all human behavior. They ran us through skits and role-playing and stuff, and it was amazing the stuff that they could get out of us. And we knew what was coming, but they could tweak our emotions. That's how good those instructors were, and made us see how we could be in charge and damage people without even trying. Get them discouraged. Get them to hurt. They did that all in one day. They split us in half. There was 17 to a group. First day, they laid, this half got the rules. And they went through the scenario. I was in the second half. By the time I got through that in 2 hours, we was all mad at the first bunch. We was mad. And after lunch, they switched. Same people. And they switched roles. And in 2 hours, the other bunch was mad at us because we were in charge. And we weren't being mean and malicious. That's how good those guys were. They had one from Waco, Texas. That was a retired cop from down there. And he'd teach his particular hour on some facet of human behavior. And then he'd do his recap at the end of the hour. And then he'd say, just like it says in the scriptures, he did that every day. And after a while, I got to going back to my room and looking up. And I didn't have to look far. He never gave us a book. He never gave us a chapter. He never gave us a verse. But you could find an example. He finally made a believer out of me when he was teaching us how to fire people. Or how to suspend people. And he taught it. He recapped it. I went back to my room, and I looked it up. And I come back to him the next morning at breakfast. And I says, "That yesterday's lesson." He says, "Yeah." I says, "That was the woman at the well." And he just smiles and he goes, "Yeah, it was." Connect the woman at the well to firing somebody. He taught me how to fire people. And they shook my hand afterwards. I fired 12 of them that way. 13th one, I didn't get that job done. I had to bite her head off and spit it out the door. Because that's the only thing she understood. But what he taught us worked, and it was scriptural, and it was something I had never looked at before in how you treat people. And he used the woman at the well. And I know he was right because I tried it and it worked. You know, I've talked about all this negative stuff about people and things. I'm going to do a little positive right now. We've got a guy in our church. It's absolutely amazing how many thousands of people that he has positively influenced in his life. He's not a minister. He's a church member. When I first became aware of him was when he first went to work up there after I did. And he became officer friendly. You know who I'm talking about, Dick. It's your brother-in-law. Virgil Rudd has influenced more people in Independence, Missouri than any 10 people. He always made it a practice never to use anything that was magic to entertain him, because that was of Satan as far as he was concerned, and he was right. He never preached to him out of the Bible or the Book of Mormon in classes that he held, because he didn't have to. He showed them how to do it. He showed them how it worked. And those kids ate it up. And for generations, that man influenced Independence. And I'm talking about thousands of people. Just before I retired, we had a police chorus. And he was in it, I was in it. And we always did the Mayor's Christmas Tree program just before Christmas each year. And they filled the RLS auditorium with people. I mean that was standing room only for that show or for that program. And the first year we did it, we all sat down in uniform, and there was about 30 of us, and we're sitting down by the stage. Everybody would walk by us and get up on the stage, you know, and there was choirs and all of this stuff. And every high school and every middle school had choirs that sang that day. And word got out that Officer Friendly was sitting there. And even the high schoolers reacted to him. They couldn't wait to wave at him or to say hi to him. And they hadn't been around him for years. But that's how he treated them. And that's how he made them feel. And that's how he made them feel positive about themselves. And he used what's in here without ever saying it. I know he did. He was so popular there. Is so popular there, he's retired now, that he can't stop at a stoplight without somebody recognizing him in another car. He can't go into a convenience store without somebody running up to him that was around him 25 years ago. That's his influence. Bet you didn't know that about that man. Because when you see him in our church, They say him and Grace sit back in the corner, and they don't say a word. The scuttlebutt was when he was working, and this was from the mayor to the city manager to the city councilman to the department heads. If you want something done here in the city, convince Virgil to do it, and he'll get it done. So that's how hard-headed he was. And it might take him a couple of years to get it done, but he always got it done. And that's what the city fathers would say about Virgil Rudd, or Al Rudd, if we knew him. And I know where he got all that. He got it out of here. He flat got it out of here. And he doesn't brag about it. He doesn't talk about it. You can go sit with him, and he'll never quote you a scripture, but he'll live it. Right, Dick?
Exactly.
One of the most influential men in Independence. And he sits back in the back for a church service in our church. That's how it works. That's how it's supposed to work. He'd walk into a classroom or he'd walk into a group at an assembly and they'd just all go nuts because there was Officer Friendly. When Officer Friendly in St. Joseph, Missouri got hit and killed by a car on a car check, the TV stations had to find Virgil Rudd and let it be known that that wasn't him because they were getting flooded with calls. They finally found him. He was wood carving down at Branson's what he was doing. And they finally located him in Branson. And then they could put it out on the news there that it wasn't the Officer Friendly in Independence. That's how he impacted people. And it's because, I'm convinced, he understood this and he knew how to use it properly because that was his life's desire. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding. Oh, by the way, don't ever tell him I said this out here. He'll kill me. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give subtly to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb and the interpretation and the words of the wise and their dark sayings. See, that's just the first, that's the first six verses, basically. I didn't read the first verse, but that's the first six verses in Proverbs. And then the rest of it, the other in my book, it's about 35 pages, expands on all of those things. And then the other 65 books and the other 17 books back it up. Somewhere in there, there's an example that'll flip your switch, that'll punch your button, and you'll understand it if you look at it that way. I tried a lot. I failed a lot. But I refuse to give up, I hope. It's my prayer that we all do that. Thank you.